Welcome tonight to Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobby that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is diversity and the climate movement. To get us going, we are going to have a wonderful guest speaker. We have none other than CCL's own higher education coordinator, Clara Feng, as our speaker tonight. Clara started volunteering with CCL in 2016 and now serves as the higher education coordinator in her role. She helps members conduct outreach to higher education and engage students across the country in climate advocacy. I think we just set a new high watermark for registrants for this upcoming DC conference. You can ask Clara how many that might be. But Clara's been just doing absolutely wonderful work helping members get endorsed as well and getting students involved in internships with local chapters. And we're so honored for your work and research in diversity as well, Clara, tonight. Job to get us well, there, if we've done our following threefold goal, we'll do first the highlight of asking, why is diversity important for climate change? We'll pivot then to understanding, why has the climate movement not been diverse? And then we'll take action we by and how we can become more diverse and inclusive in our own chapters as a result. And to get us there, the agenda is pretty straightforward. Claire is going to start by reviewing the challenges of diversity and then really frame that towards benefits that come with diversity. We'll then talk about the perceptions of various perspectives on climate change, and then the barriers of history and culture behind diversity in this country and the environmental movement. And then Clara is going to talk about some case studies, give recommendations for CCL chapters, and really end before taking Q&A with uplifting some powerful resources and references. And the floor is yours. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, everyone.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk about this topic on CCU. This is something I've been working on for the last year for CCL. Madeline was excited that I wanted to do this research, and it's been supported by CCL, so I'm really grateful for the chance to share it with you. So first, I'm going to talk about the challenges of diversity. We know that the U.S. is experiencing a profound demographic shift. Currently, non-white people constitute 40% of the U.S. population, and they are expected to be half of the population by 2042. And in this chart on the right, you can see the growth in the different groups from 2015 to 2065. We also know that people of color in the United States are the hardest hit from the effects of climate change. So, for example, heat-related deaths among African Americans are 100 to 200% more than we see in white populations. An increase in heat-related deaths due to climate change is 90%. And 71% of African Americans live in counties in violation of federal air pollution standards compared to 58% for whites. So these statistics tell us that there is a lot of environmental injustice in our country where people of color are disproportionately burdened with the impacts of climate change. People of color are also underrepresented in environmental organizations. So even though they're experiencing all these impacts, they aren't in the organizations working to defend them and to do something about it. From this 2014 study by Dorsetta Taylor, she did a survey of environmental nonprofit organizations, government organizations, and foundations. And she found that people of color make up about 12% of the staff at environmental organizations, 4.6% for members of the board, 22.5% for interns. So this is extremely low compared to the general population where people of color are 40%. And also for people of color in the workforce, in the science workforce, is actually 30%. People of color tend to be less civically engaged on climate. So this means that they don't contact their members of Congress as much. They're not participating in as many meetings. They are not voting as much in midterm elections, especially. So this chart shows some of the engagement where you can see in terms of contacting public officials or supporting campaigns, attending political meetings, white people do a lot more of these things than all the other groups. Then moving on to the benefits of diversity. Why do we want to do it? So obviously with this, the growing numbers of people of color, these voters are increasingly determining the outcomes of elections, and politicians are paying attention to their priorities and ignoring what they want and their concerns is bad for any politician these days. Diversity has a lot of benefits to environmental organizations. In this 2017 study by Green 2.0, they surveyed managers at environmental organizations about what they saw were the benefits of diversity to them. And they said increased creativity, increased productivity of their employees, more genuine meritocracy, better management of employee relations, additional fundraising networks, appear more connected to communities. They also said that the benefits of diversity to the environmental sector include increased focus on environmental justice, get marginalized communities involved, widen the constituency, broaden movement, have more heterogeneous engagement, attack environmental problems on multiple fronts. Environmental organizations risk becoming irrelevant if we're not engaging this huge portion of the population. Angela Park, who is a diversity, equity, inclusion expert, said, without support of people of color, the environment risks being marginalized as a white, upper-middle-class, suburban boutique-y issue that doesn't speak to the realities of the vast majority of people in the U.S. and around the world. Marcelo Banta, who is the founder of the Center for Diversity in the Environment, said, talented people who do not identify with the dominant culture will feel undervalued, unappreciated, burned out, and leave the organization or the movement altogether. So we can see that if the environmental movement continues to have such a low representation of people of color and be so predominantly white, it kind of loses its legitimacy because they're seen as niche. They're seen as not representing the interests of the people. They're seen as not being concerned about them. So it's very detrimental to the movement itself. We see from a lot of studies that people of color deeply care about climate change. So in the next few slides, I'm going to talk about that. The Pew Research Center did surveys for a number of years on the percentage of Americans who think global warming should be a top priority for President and Congress. And you can see here that the percentage of non-whites who say climate change should be a top priority has consistently been higher than the percentage for whites. And the percentage of whites that say this should be a top priority has dropped from 2007-14. Pew Research Center stopped doing the survey since then, but we can see from other questionnaires that concern has raised even more for non-whites and a little bit for whites, but the gap is still there. This is a somewhat older study, Yale Program on Climate Change Communication did this in 2010, and they asked people of color and white people, you know, all kinds of questions about climate change. And you see here that all these non-white groups feel very worried or somewhat worried, more so than whites. They asked, how big of an effort should the United States make to reduce global warming? And the percentage of people of color who said a large-scale effort, even if it has large economic costs, show up as more than white people who answer the same way. Macias did a really good study, and he found that people of color in the United States perceive greater risks for threats posed by climate change and nuclear power generation than whites, even when controlled for age, gender, household income, education, political views, and rural slash urban places of residence. People of color also express more concern about these topics, meaning climate change and nuclear energy, than they did for more localized issues such as air pollution from industry and transportation. He also found that higher household income predicts significantly lower odds of perceiving risk, and higher educational attainment is associated with perception of greater risk. African Americans as a group emit 20% less greenhouse gases than whites and nearly 18% less than all Americans. They are also the most impacted in the U.S. from things like heat deaths to asthma to flooding to economic displacement. African Americans are the worst impacted of all the ethnic groups. They show a really high level of concern on climate change and the support for government action. And they also have deep networks for activism, which would be quite an asset if we could get them more involved in climate change. Latinos are the fastest growing segment of the US population, and most of them have ties to countries severely impacted by climate change. In South America or Central America, those countries are already devastated by climate change. The Yale survey, which was done in 2017, found that 66% of English-speaking Latinos and 77% of Spanish-speaking Latinos are alarmed or concerned about climate change. And 79% of alarmed Spanish-speaking Latinos are very willing to participate in actions to address it. So here's the chart from the Yale study. They looked at non-Latinos, alarmed, concerned, cautious, et cetera. English language Latinos are more concerned than the non-Latinos, and Spanish language Latinos are even more alarmed and concerned. Here they looked at willingness to join a campaign to reduce global warming among the alarmed. And they said, you know, this is all people who would probably do it, or I would definitely do it, or I am participating in a campaign like this now, all very high for all three groups and highest for alarmed Spanish language Latinos. So definitely a lot of potential in that group. Asian Americans have the highest average income and education level of all minority groups within the United States. And high education level is correlated with more belief in climate change and more concern about it. And they show very high levels of concern for climate change and support for policies aimed at mitigation. 76% of Asian Americans support setting stricter emission limits to power plants in order to address climate change. And global climate change is predicted to overwhelmingly affect Asian countries. In fact, the top 10 of the 10 of the top 12 most at-risk countries from climate change are in Asia. Native Americans are a smaller percentage of the population than the previous groups, but they are very impacted by climate change and also very active in it. As a people, they still rely on subsistence ways of living, so they've often been the first to experience the impacts of climate change. They have also borne the burden of the burden from fossil fuel development, from extraction to transportation, refining, and waste. The pollution on these activities is often put on Native American communities. Even climate solutions have negative consequences for Native Americans, or things like carbon pricing or nuclear energy or carbon storage. Native Americans are very concerned that these solutions will disproportionately harm them. They have been leaders in the climate movement. So people like Faith Spotted Eagle, who led the fight to oppose Keystone XL and Dakota Access Pipelines. They've participated in international negotiations. So they are a very powerful group in this. So moving into why haven't people of color been as engaged in climate change and the environmental movement in general? There's a very deep history of this that is good to be aware of. So the environmental movement today evolved out of the U.S. conservation movement, which got started in the early 1800s. So people were alarmed at the rate at which development was expanding across the United States, the loss of forests and buffalo and passenger pigeons and so forth. So the conservation movement kind of came out of this desire to preserve the wilderness. But a lot of the founders of the conservation movement were elite, white, wealthy men who wanted to preserve their hunting, fishing, and hiking grounds. And they weren't so concerned about social issues like civil rights or women's rights or Ivy League graduates, business owners who benefited from the status quo and the exploitation of nature and workers. So their environmental agenda is very different from what we consider the environmental justice agenda today. So their early environmental organizations that they started, like the Boone and Crockett Club, the Sierra Club, and the Audubon Society, were really social clubs for wealthy people that enjoyed the outdoors and that tried to influence politics for their agenda. So they were socially homogenous and exclusionary. They intentionally excluded membership from women, people of color, and those they considered belonging to an inferior social economic class. They were beneficiaries of capitalism, institutional racism, and patriarchy, and they were uninterested in addressing the social inequalities like slavery, oppression of women, abuse of labor, which actually most of the progressives at the time were very active in. So for a lot of these reasons, people of color don't have a very good relationship with those people in the conservation movement. Then the environmental movement really came to the foreground, beginning with Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, published in 1955, and the first Earth Day in 1970. And the new environmental movement took on issues like pesticide use, air pollution, toxic waste, and nuclear energy. They recognized that communities of color suffered a greater proportion of environmental ills. The grassroots environmental movement started to separate from the mainstream environmental movement that were the inheritors of the conservation movement. So on January 21st, 1981, there came this pivotal moment where executive directors of 10 mainstream environmental organizations decided to meet together after the election of Ronald Reagan and to decide how they wanted the movement to go forward with the election of this conservative president. So that group of 10 included the Sierra Club, NRDC, Friends of the Earth, this collection that you see here. And they purposely excluded advocacy organizations and apolitical groups, basically groups that they saw were adversarial to business interests, that embraced tactics that they didn't consider to be savory, that maybe were too vocal about certain issues. And that really created this divide in the environmental movement where there was this mainstream club and inside the Beltway club of these big organizations who then got most of the money and then defined the agenda of the environmental movement within the Washington Beltway. And then all these other organizations were kind of on the outside doing other things. So for a long time, during that time, people of color were perceived as not caring about environmental issues. a 1972 study of 1,500 environmental volunteers nationwide found that 98% of them were white. Other studies, they asked whether people like to go camping, hiking, skiing, swimming, etc., in public parks and wilderness areas. And obviously white people did those things more than people of color. So that perpetuated this unfortunate perception that minorities are not interested in the environment. And they didn't acknowledge that there were a lot of barriers for people of color from doing those things because of the things that the conservationists did to make sure people of color were not using public lands. People of color also face systemic prejudices in society, in hiring. So it's harder for them to get hired into mainstream environmental organizations. Dr. Dorsetta Taylor has done a lot of research on this. She wrote that environmental organizations practice insular hiring practices that lead to racial bias. So these are things like, hiring from networks that you know, from certain schools, hiring friends and colleagues of people who are already in the organization. So obviously people in the organization know people who are mostly like them. So it doesn't then create diversity in the organization. So examples include that Blacks face discrimination in 1 out of 5 interviews and are denied job offers 20% of the time. In comparison to whites, Black and Latinos of equal credentials receive 25% fewer job interviews and 34% fewer job offers. And discriminatory employers also offer higher salaries and higher status positions to whites. So these statistics came out of experiments where they gave employers sample resumes where everything was the same except the name of the candidate. And if it was more Black or Latino sounding, then they would be rejected more often. Climate change also faced this problem of framing. Angela Park puts it as, to many environmental justice activists, most climate activists are primarily concerned with addressing the technological challenges of climate change. They frame climate change in terms of a scientific problem, determine solutions, and inform the public. They tend to overlook the ways in which climate change is linked to historical exploitation and injustice, and they are not aware always of the ways in which their own attitudes and approaches keep potential partners at bay. Here she's pointing to the fact that we've talked about climate change a lot as this big global abstract problem, with lots of numbers and parts per million and things like that, not being as good about connecting it to problems that poor communities face, like not having clean air or water, unemployment, etc. And it's harder for average people to connect with the problem when you frame it that way. Environmental justice activists sometimes do not feel that they've treated as equal partners on climate change. So some quotes from these various people: sometimes it's a tone and the patronizing attitudes, not just the words, and it really doesn't help to pat someone on the head. There's a feeling or assumption that Native people or people of color who live in impoverished communities aren't smart enough to come up with real solutions to our energy and climate problems. We frame climate change in terms of impacted communities, what the facilities look like, health impacts, access to health or water or jobs. Reflected back to us, we're told that all we care about is local impacts, and since carbon is global, our focus is misplaced at best or irrelevant at worst. So how do we build a just and inclusive climate movement? The reason I've spent all this time talking about the history is that we're really not starting from neutral here or from zero. We have basically dug ourselves into this hole and need to make up for the things that we have done in the past. It's kind of like people saying, there's no racism today, everybody is equal, but people don't start on equal ground because of all of the institutional and historic racism that impacts them. So what does it mean to be diverse? Diversity encompasses acceptance and respect. It means understanding that each individual is unique and recognizing our individual differences. These can be along the dimensions of race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, social economic status, age, physical abilities, religious beliefs, political beliefs, or other ideologies. Acting on diversity means building alliances across differences so that we can work together to eradicate all forms of discrimination. So this is something that we are working on at CCL to realize that differences are good, and we need to work together with acceptance and respect, and that there's so many ways that we're individuals, and we need to embrace all of them. Another important concept is the distinction among diversity, inclusion, and equity. So diversity is about the existence of differences between people and perspectives. So you can have an organization with different genders and races and things like that, and you can say that's diverse. But that doesn't mean that it's inclusive or equitable. So the other two are really important because they talk about the culture, not just the existence of difference, but the acceptance of them, the empowerment of different perspectives. Inclusion is about a culture of welcoming and of respect. And then impact, equity is about the impact and the work that we're doing in the world. You know, is it benefiting everybody? Is it not harming certain people while benefiting others? Is what we're doing just and fair? So Jacqueline Patterson is the director of the NAACP Environmental and Climate Justice Program. And she says a lot that diversity is not enough, and done alone, it can be counterproductive. So this quote, engage in a process that fosters institution-wide commitment to anti-oppression / anti-racism. As recruitment occurs and people of color join the organization, ensure that there are checkpoints along the way to ensure that the person is being heard and supported, as well as encouraging, supporting, caucusing by people of color within your organization and with other organizations for peer support and exchanging lessons on best practices in addressing challenges and optimizing gains. So this is something almost all the experts say, that it's not enough to just be diverse. And in fact, if you bring in people without first changing your culture to be inclusive and equitable, then you're just going to hurt those people all over again. And we really need to work on ourselves and create a welcoming culture before we can really reach out and bring more diverse people into the organization. Earth Justice does a really good job around creating equitable partnerships. They are they mostly work on environmental law cases and fighting for the rights of environmentally oppressed communities. And they have really advanced their model of working with communities of color, low-income communities that are affected by pollution and fossil fuel development and things like that, and elevating their voices and letting them take the lead in creating a better communities. 350.org and their partners were also really great at creating equitable partnerships for the People's Climate Movement. When they were putting together the People's Climate March, they were quite intentional that the march should be led by frontline communities. The leaders of those communities needed to make those decisions and march at the head of the line. And it was kind of the first time that the mainstream white organizations took a step back in order to let those frontline communities lead the effort. All right, so we want to take some time on talking about what can we all do to help diversity in our organization. So the first thing is to become educated about this. This is not something that's talked a lot in society, at least I don't think, especially around the environmental movement. So there's really a lot of education, I think, that we can catch up on. So I wrote this very long report that's about the historical and cultural barriers. And then there are other papers out there that are also really excellent. So if you click on that link, you can access the Google folder where you'll find all of them. We recently created a People of the Global Majority Caucus. So if you are a person of color, we invite you to join that and network with each other. If you're not a person of color, you can join the Friends of the People of the Global Majority Caucus at a later time. You can talk to people of color and listen to their perspectives and, you know, what they think of climate change and what concerns them. When a POC comes to CCL, be their friend. You can help them get involved, be their ally, provide rides if they need transportation, or fundraise if they can't afford to come to the conference. I do youth outreach, and I feel like our members do this a lot for the young people. And I think it's similar when it comes to people of color. You know, like when a young person comes to a CCL meeting and everybody else in the group is over 50, they are going to feel a little uncomfortable. So you can't treat them just like any other member at CCL. It really helps if you can be like, wow, you know, we're so appreciative that you're here, and really check up on them, be attentive to them, help them get involved, to let them know that you really welcome them to be there. With POC-based organizations, it's great to reach out to them and to become allies, but it's important to show respect and to show that you're interested in learning what they're doing and what their priorities are before you try to tell them about the Energy Innovation Act and get them on board. A lot of the experts I've talked to say that's what white organizations do a lot, and it turns people off. That what we really should do is look at what those organizations are already doing on climate change and to support them before we ask for their support. CCL also does conferences. We do regional conferences. We do climate advocate training. And we can make sure that the events that we do have diversity. What you should not do is assume that people of color don't understand about climate change or don't care. Also, like I said, not try to get people on board with your solution before you understand their priorities. You should not go where you are not invited. So really develop those relationships, build that trust before you try to do your presentation on CCL, for example. And also not assume that if you open doors, people will come, or assume that it's other people's responsibility. Diversity is something that we all should do, and understanding that we're not starting from neutral, that there's a long history of exclusion and mistrust. We have a lot of work to do to overcome that. So first, you can learn about your local community and find out who the people of color are. And one tool you can use is factfinder.census.gov. And their website, you can be able to see the breakdown of different populations. You can also go to consulates, chambers of commerce, and community centers, and they often have information on POC-based organizations. So Karina Ramirez did the search, and she found that in West Palm Beach, 23% of her community identified as Latino. So that was helpful. And then these groups and places are often where
connecting
you can
with communities of color in your groups.
Try to connect climate change with their concerns and priorities. And then eventually you can tell them about our initiatives for people of color. For example, we have the Spanish Action Team
and Karina, who does a lot of work around translations and engaging the Latino community. Advance. Yeah. Other places, good places to find people of color. You can table at a farmer's market or visit libraries and community centers, neighborhood associations, street fairs, colleges and universities. You know, basically, if we go out to these public events, there's going to be diversity. There's going to be people in the community. And I think that's kind of the best way to find diversity. So Marcela Bond has said, one thing we can do is to create true and equitable partnerships, entering the space with humility, listening to understand, not starting with your agenda. Start by listening to their work and their agenda and using your creativity to understand how your work can really support theirs. If there's an opportunity to work together, continue to step back with your leadership. Get to the space of co-creation. Yeah, so I do want to emphasize this because this is what the experts say a lot, that it's so important for environmental organizations to listen and to be humble and to create partnerships where the other organization gets to take the lead. And then we'd like to hear about your efforts. So you can email Karina, who is our diversity outreach coordinator. Also, Prinzella is now working on African-American outreach. And they have a lot of resources. And they can also bring the members that you're interested in bringing into CCL and helping them find a community in CCL. So these include the People of the Global Majority Caucus, the Spanish Language Action Team, Climate Culture Action Team, the Chinese Action Team, and the LGBTQ Action Team. Also, a lot of CCL's materials are now in Spanish. And these are kind of other resources on from other organizations that work on diversity in the environment. Here's a link to a database of people of color in environmental and climate justice for speakers, consultants, board members, etc. And then here's a very short list of works cited, some of the most influential works that I drew from my research. Okay. Environmental organizations, including CCL, currently have a gap in their diversity, which presents a huge opportunity as well. Diversity is a huge challenge, and to be successful requires commitment, strategy, and resources. And this commitment to diversity is everybody's responsibility and should be integrated into our work as CCL chapters. So the heart of the matter is the passion of people that see themselves as having the most at stake in the issue is what creates transformative change that reverberates throughout society. So that's why we want to do this and why it's important.
Absolutely. Thank you, Claire, for all of the time and the grounded history that you've put into helping all of us understand a lot of what we are really trying to build here and the context that we're inheriting. Let us continue this discussion. Where to find this in community, where you can participate in the forums and keep the conversation going and, you know, share this with your own groups. So on this slide here, you can see a little reminder of where to find the training topics in community. It's just simply community.citizensclimate.org/topics. And just as a reminder that Claire's email as well is provided here. It's claire.fang@citizensclimate.org. You're more than welcome to participate in the forums and connect to the training topic that we have in community on specifically tonight's topic. But before anything else, I'll just unmute all lines here and stop sharing so we can see each other's beautiful faces and just really thank all of you for making it tonight. You are the absolute reason why we're having the success and really pushing ourselves and growing in these important areas. And we really appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Claire.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Claire.
Thank you, everybody.